Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. On the show today, we'll be looking at how to deal with adult peer pressure in social situations during these COVID times. We'll also talk about how to prepare your children for going back to school. Our guest, Shyla Mergain. She's a distinguished psychologist in the Department of Orthopedics and Rehabilitation out of the University of Wisconsin-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. She's also a speaker, a writer, facilitator, a therapist. So it's great to have her back. And wondering, are you having problems saying no to family and friends who may want to socialize? What problems do you foresee when your children go back to school? Love to hear from you. Give a call at 800-642-1234, or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. And Shyla Mergain, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me, Larry.
Everyone seems to have their own ideas about what is and what isn't safe when it comes to socializing. And that can cause all kinds of problems, can it?
Definitely can. And it's striking that we are close to 1,000 deaths in Wisconsin and 60,000 positive tests. And it's really time to recommit to following the CDC guidelines. But during the summer months, many people have felt maybe desire to engage in more social activity, from backyard barbecues to beach vacations. And there can certainly be increased peer pressure as well to start to become lax in following those safety measures. So, you know, certainly we all want our lives to return to normal, but we really need to get comfortable with setting those firm boundaries around following the CDC guidelines.
Well, you know, the last thing we need is more stress right about now. Where do we start in making things easier to handle?
When we encounter some of that peer pressure, it could be intentional or unintentional, it becomes a slippery slope that we can start to do things like not wear a mask or get too close to somebody or accept the invitation to go indoors to somebody's home. And it's really important to come back to center and, in a sense, find our own North Star based on what you feel comfortable with, depending on your own community CDC guidelines and COVID-19 rates. So the first thing I really encourage people to do is to recommit to their own personal guidelines and even write them down. This is especially important as kids are going back to school in whatever format, whether it's online or a hybrid or in person. And talk about it in your family. Reflect on what your community code is or your family code is and agree upon it. Write it down. You could even have each person sign it and then have it visible. That constant reminder helps you really reaffirm it day to day. And it also helps you push back against any pressure. Because, again, if you're in that moment and somebody invites you in, instead of, you know, people pleasing can come into play. We want to please a neighbor. We want to please a friend. But when we have those guidelines that we're repeatedly returning to, it can help give us some of that core strength to say no or to set that boundary or even just brainstorm alternatives of, no, I let's not go in, let's do something outside, or no, I'm not really up for the family barbecue, let's do virtual games instead over Zoom.
So there are a few things that we can do, but just saying no is problematic for some people. Just how do you say no? Just say no, I guess.
Yeah, like, you know, in Wisconsin, we like to be nice. I think it's one of the joys of living here. We're a pleasant, polite state, and we can feel uncomfortable disappointing people. But at the same time, we want to put our health front and our front our top priority. And I think this is where really connecting back to those core values and what helps you feel safe. And when you're saying no, you might even create a pause. You might say, let me think about it and get back to you, or let me talk about it with my spouse and get back to you. Because sometimes saying no can be better done in an email or a text. A great example, I was My parents live up in Door County, and I really wanted to go up to Washington Island, and I was really excited about it. And I mentioned it to them, and they said, oh, that's a great idea. Let's think about it. Well, a week later, my mom texted and said, I don't feel comfortable. Washington Island's not going anywhere. Let's plan on it next year. Instead, let's take a walk, outside in a more neighboring park that will be a lot safer and we don't have to ride that public ferry. And I thought that was a great example of taking a pause before you say no, and then delivering it in a way that suggests enthusiasm for doing it on the end of this pandemic and then suggesting an alternative. So you're not rejecting the friendship, but you're more really promoting your own health and the safety of both people at the same time.
Yeah. One of the kinds of events that is problematic, I think, is a wedding. All right, we've got a wedding planned, and you get an invitation to a wedding, and it doesn't look like it's going to be, it looks like there are going to be a lot of people there, and are anybody going to wear a mask? But it's your favorite niece. And
it's your favorite person, favorite niece. One of my best friends is actually getting married this week on Saturday, Larry. And I said to her ahead of time, because you can only have 25 people there, I said, hey, if I don't make the invite list, that's okay. I'd love to watch it on Zoom. So I'm going to have two friends. We're going to social distance and watch it on our laptops outside in the backyard in a different location. But I think you bring up a great point, and it brings up an example of somebody was going to a baby shower of a favorite niece. And when they were driving down there, the family, they actually brainstormed ahead of time various scenarios they would encounter, and they actually role played and came up with some scripting on how to really advocate for safety measures. Like if somebody's getting too close, what could you say? And they had the kids practice saying, hey, let's social distance. Let's move those chairs apart. I'm going to take a step back. When Uncle Bob kind of sneered when you put on a mask, what you would say or even say internally to yourself to keep that mask on. Peer pressure can be negative, but it also can be positive. And research shows that individuals are more likely to adopt a new healthy lifestyle practice when others in their social network adopt one too. So, if you can anticipate ahead of time, figure out ways to get creative to stay safe, you can just be that role model of COVID-19 safety measures that can really influence others. And certainly we've all had those examples where maybe you're in a group and one person puts on a mask, and all of a sudden the next person reaches for their mask, and before you know it, everyone's wearing a mask. So that kind of ripple effect can happen in that positive way, and we can be some of those action-oriented agents for change.
Shyla Morgain, our guest today, distinguished psychologist in the Department of Orthopedics and Rehabilitation at UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. Great to have her with us. Well, what are your thoughts on this as you listen in here as we visit about social pressure during the pandemic? Maybe an experience to share, a question to ask. I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us. The email address is ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. And we can take some calls. Tyler, our engineer, said one of his best friends canceled his wedding from earlier this summer, then decided to do a small gathering anyway last week. All right, maybe that works and maybe it doesn't, but you need to have some clarity as to how that is going to proceed, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And sounds like a really safe choice. And a celebration can happen next year where you invite everyone. And I think it brings up the really important point to respect differences, that it's easy to judge others or feel like somebody should do something, but everyone's doing the best they can to get through this difficult time, and everyone has various life circumstances. People throughout Wisconsin live in different communities that have different COVID-19 rates. So It's just really important to accept and don't shame others' actions and choices. Instead, you know, we can celebrate those differences, but also make sure that you're maintaining your own guidelines if you're getting pushback from others.
Yeah. Judy in Milwaukee has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Judy.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I'm really loving this show. This is, you know, I know this is really important. I'm a grandparent watching a granddaughter who is, both her parents are working, and there's another set of grandparents who I know are not as, well, they're more or less anti-maskers. And she goes over there, and now the granddaughter has started playing with other kids again. There was a time early on when I said, no, I can't do this, and I was, you know, we pulled back from babysitting, but I just feel guilty putting the whole load on the other grandparents then. And I know there's other grandparents in the same boat. You know, I know there's a lot of them out there who are dealing with this. I'm just wondering how... Do I just mask up the whole time that we're there? I mean, would that be helpful? I don't have the guts to say no, I won't do it anymore. I just need some words of encouragement here.
Well, Judy, you're not alone. I'm pretty sure of that. Shyla, comments for Judy.
Yeah, Judy, thanks so much for bringing that up. And that is such an important topic of grandparents interacting with grandkids, but keeping safe and keeping the child safe. And I think you're starting to highlight how can I get creative to really enjoy the visit? That's such precious time. Could we be outdoors where there can be social distancing if that grandchild's inside? Could I be wearing masks? Some families are choosing to get tested for COVID-19. Could we all get tested? And then could I have a conversation with the grandchild's parents to talk about now that weather's going to start to turn, the child may be going back to school, what are some ways we can keep our bubble of family members safe? And what are some things we want to maybe double down on that we've gotten lax around? Like the child, if it's having a play date, could they do it virtually? Could they be outside playing? And maybe the grandparents would be, the other set of grandparents would be willing to make some changes, especially as our numbers rise. But I would encourage you to continue to communicate and get creative. And certainly wearing a mask is a great example. As I mentioned, I sometimes see my parents in Door County, and we all wear masks. Initially, we'd all wear masks when I would arrive, and now I just get tested each time I go up there as a way to ensure safety, and we still practice social distancing just to stay safe, extra safe. So, again, I think there are ways to do it, but we just want to be smart about it. And then you can just relax and enjoy the visit more, too. You won't be so tight and anxious and worried afterwards.
Judy, thank you so much for calling. Shyla Morgane, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our producer. Tyler Ditter, our engineer. And you are listening to the Ideas Network. Talking today about how to deal with the social pressures that come during this pandemic time with our guest, Shyla Morgane, distinguished psychologist in the Department of Orthopedics and Rehabilitation at UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. Questions, comments, or maybe an experience to share and how it was dealt with one way or the other. I'd love to hear from you on that at 800-642-1234, or you can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Deb in Mesa Mani, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Deb.
Hi, how are you?
Great, appreciate the call.
No problem. Yes, I was just listening, and this is something I can relate to because this past Saturday, I was asked to be a speaker at a wedding, and was told it was presented to me as being a small gathering. And after the wedding was over, there was probably 25 people at the wedding. Suddenly guests arrived and ended up being well over 50 people. So I, you know, politely stepped aside and left earlier than what I had planned to.
Yeah. Sometimes you have to do that, Shyla.
Absolutely, Deb. That sounds like a real gift that you could be there and be a speaker, but then also removed yourself so you stayed safe. And I think it's a great example of diffusing conflict that, you know, if you are in a gathering, you might anticipate, oh, you know, the more people are going to show up or people might start drinking and not social distancing, and remove yourself. And again, I think just having a script ready can be helpful that you think of ahead of time. Example, my dad plays golf. It's one of his favorite things to do. And he has gotten pressure to share golf carts. The guys want to share, save some money, and eat out afterwards. And he came up with a script that he used that I think can be really helpful. You know, thank you, but I want to keep myself safe and practice social distancing, and I'm not comfortable with doing that kind of activity. But I'm looking forward to our 9 holes and continuing to improve our game so we can win that trophy at the end of the season. So, you know, again, our boundaries aren't up for debate. You know, we decide our boundaries. And even if there's pushback, I think, again, we're really modeling a responsible safety measures that we all need to be adopting, you know, especially as school starts. And I always say the adults, we don't want to let our kids down. We want to do everything we can right now to give our children the best chance they can have of getting back to more regular school and normal social and extracurricular activities.
Thank you again, Deb, for calling. Appreciate it. Martha from Menominee Falls called to ask, this is in relation to your comment, I believe, about getting tested before you see your mom and dad. She wondered how you get your testing results so quickly.
Oh, yeah. We're fortunate here in Madison currently that my last test result was under 24 hours. When I first got tested, it took, I think, 3 days. So I slept in a tent outside until the test results came back. It was like a tent from the 1960s that my parents had, an old army tent of my father's. So I know different communities across Wisconsin and our nation get it takes different lengths of time. But, you know, if it does take longer, great practice is just quarantine yourself during that time until the results come back so you know they're fairly accurate, and still taking safety precautions in case it's a false negative.
Somebody else commented that there was a cousin got married and there was a lot of passive-aggressive tension toward people changing their minds about attending. And so that's kind of a longer range thing. I mean, if you've got that going, that may take some time to get over.
It can. You can get that pushback and people's feelings can get hurt, especially if there are those expectations that you would be there, participate in a particular way. And I often encourage a broken record technique that you have that scripting in mind and you just state that sentence of, I'd love to be there, but it feels risky right now, but I look forward to seeing the photos or hearing about it. You get the pushback and then you just state that again. You might even have to state it a third time or fourth time, and people will get over it. You know, I always say you can't set a boundary and take care of the other person's feelings at the same time. So sometimes feelings do get hurt and there can be some resentment or passive aggressiveness, but hopefully over time you can work through that. And lastly, sometimes when you are getting an invitation, it can be helpful to even suggest or brainstorm with the other person, what a great idea. How do we do this during COVID-19? How can we stay safe? So you're enlisting the other person to generate ideas. Like if you're getting together outside, you might agree ahead of time to make sure the chairs are 6 feet apart. Or if we're doing this activity, like taking a hike together where we can't social distance, let's wear masks outside so we're not spreading the virus. So sometimes when you can do it ahead of time, it lands a little bit softer when you have to course correct during the interaction.
Molly emailed that she has a friend who said, the friend said she read an article about how hard it is to catch the virus outside and doesn't feel it's important to wear a mask while hiking. She also said that she's annoyed with friends who feel like they have to wear a mask next to her, and annoyed with other hikers who make more space between her when they are passing on the trail. She's annoyed that others don't understand the science that explains why COVID is not able to be passed during one breath while passing outdoors. Molly felt safe with her friends because she's good at social distancing other times, but she did feel strange putting on a mask next to her friend or when hikers passed by her. She also felt ashamed for not knowing the science she referred to and for disagreeing with her. The varied sources of information can make discussions more difficult, as I guess the main point here.
Yeah, that's a tough one, Molly, and I'm sure other people have felt that. And I'm sorry that you felt some shame around that. And outdoors is certainly safer. There is still a slight risk, and I always think that people may choose to be extra cautious because they might have a pre-existing condition, or maybe they have a family member with a pre-existing condition that would make it quite lethal for them to contract the virus. So when we're passing a stranger like a hiker, we never know his or her own unique circumstances that might make them really staying extra cautious. So it sounds like a great discussion, though, Molly, for you and your friends of, you know, what you feel comfortable doing based on the information you know and your circumstances and what they feel comfortable. But I'm glad that you're out hiking. That's the most important part, even if you're making different choices.
Well, there is a lot of
that. You're social distancing too. Yeah.
Yeah. There is a lot of movement when you're out, you know, for my own walks in the morning and so forth. It feels like in some parts right along the lake where I walk sometimes, if it gets a little bit too later than normal for me to be walking, there'll be a lot of people out, and there's a lot of zigging and zagging going on. But I just feel like it's important to do that. And if somebody else isn't going to move, well, okay, you're not going to move, I'll move. Fine.
Yeah, exactly. And I think we can't be too cautious right now, especially if there is some risk, especially with wind direction. And if somebody does have the virus and they sneeze, that where the droplets are landing. Yep, that sounds good. It'd be fun to see you out there zigzagging and scary.
Well, I do a lot of it. I usually do three and a half miles or so right away in the morning. I add to my length by the amount of zigzagging that I have to do sometimes. Well, what about children now? Some kids are going to go back to school. Some are going to go back to, some are going to be in daycare kinds of situations that they haven't been in. And getting them used to some of the rules, for example, masking, that can be, I'm thinking that it's not something you say, okay, well, starting tomorrow, you got to wear a mask every day at school. You need to work into it a little bit with them.
Absolutely. Some preparation and a plan can be helpful. And these are such unusual times. There's so much uncertainty of what's going to happen next month when kids go back to school, what will happen later this fall, that it's really an opportunity to teach kids coping strategies for stress and how to deal with uncertainty. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, offers a school decision-making tool for parents, caregivers, and guardians, as well as a back-to-school checklist for parents who have questions about returning to school. So I wanted to share that resource. And then when we think about creating some structure and providing support, it's really important to kind of problem solve with kids how they can keep safe and ways that they can practice social distancing, wearing a mask. If it's a young child, I heard this example recently, you could tell them that wearing your mask is a superpower. And we're going to turn your superpowers on. This isn't my idea. I read this recently. And when you touch your face or touch somebody else or remove the mask, your superpowers lessen. And so you can make it kind of fun and like a game. And you can think about really also anticipating various scenarios that they'll encounter. And you could even practice and role play how they'll respond. And you can also problem solve. What if they see a child taking down their mask and coughing? What if you see somebody coming up and hugging you? What will you do? Can you tell me as a parent? Can you tell the teacher? And then you want to also give kids some fun alternatives. If they can't go up and hug a classmate or touch a teacher, how could they do a new form of greeting? You know, that famous elbow bump, or maybe they'll come up with their own little hand signs that they do. So that kind of structure can be really helpful. And kids are just going to need a lot of support right now. You know, parents too, if you know, try to, when we think about back to school, I think any kind of support we can give parents and children. And I also encourage parents to really be in touch with teachers around the curriculum, problem solving, educating teachers on how their child best learn and stay engaged so you can get as much help as possible.
Let's take some more calls. By the way, you can join in, too, with your own question, comment, or maybe an experience to share at 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@WPR.org. Love to hear from you. Jill in Rhinelander, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Jill. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. It's just a point I'd like to bring up that I don't hear anybody discussing. It's send the kids back to school so the parents can go back to work. Now what happens if somebody tests positive at school? The school gets closed down. Kids have to go back home for whatever length of time. And what happens with the parents that are at work? Does somebody have to quit their job again in order to take care of the child because there isn't child care available? I mean, the kids are going to be bouncing back and forth from home to school. Nobody's going to know when to wear a mask or not to wear a mask and what to do. It's going to be very confusing for the kids.
Jill, thank you so much for calling. Shyla, comment.
Wow, Jill, thank you so much. That was really powerful. I think you articulated it well, this dilemma and uncertainty. And I think highlighted this uncertainty is stressful for everyone. And, you know, research shows that trying to fight uncertainty actually makes it worse. So instead, just being with the uncertainty and the emotions as they come up is really important just by labeling it. Like, yeah, that's anxiety, or that is fear, or that's sadness around loss. And what's really important is to focus on what you can control and to stay positive. You know, that whether your child's doing hybrid or at home or homeschooling or virtual or in person for part of the day or the entire day, if parents and family members can be positive about the opportunities, whether it's going back to school and seeing friends and teachers, whether it's virtual learning that you might be able to have lunch with your child during the day or play recess with them out in the backyard. That's really, really helpful. And then providing structure. Kids need structure. And you can anticipate ahead of time, okay, instead of me nagging you all the time to do your schoolwork, how do we set up a success mindset? So what do we need? And you can even brainstorm with your child to be successful. How do we want to structure your time? Let's make to-do lists. Let's make sure we get the work in on time. Do we need a calendar? Do we need to break down the tasks into smaller sections? Do we want a teacher to check in or even get some extra help from a family member who's knowledgeable about the subject to do some tutoring? And, you know, kids are going to feel anxious. They probably are going to struggle. So to make sure we're getting enough support and asking for help out there, whether it's a school counselor or even another parent who could help out. And I also just encourage our community to support parents. You know, parents are, this is really tough, and no one prepared parents to be both teachers or principals if the child's doing virtual learning or homeschooling. So, you know, give parents some grace and some kindness during this time, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Julie in Wausau, your turn now. Hi, Julie.
Yeah, I just wanted to call in and tell you about a situation. We feel we're kind of between a rock and a hard place. My five-year-old granddaughter is being asked to be part of a wedding, and it's her father's. And it's going to be a large wedding. They do not believe in social distancing or masks. The place shouldn't even be doing it. The city we're in has gone back to, it's a small city, gone back to phase one. And if we don't allow it, we could be facing, you know, legal challenges. As a, you know, so not happy about it.
Yeah. Well, what do you think, Shyla?
Oh, that's a tough one. Yeah, and I think when safety issues come to the forefront, it can be quite anxiety-provoking. And I could imagine you even having a conversation, Julie, with your five-year-old granddaughter of even some things she could do to stay safe during that large gathering. And certainly safety, you know, is front and center. Yeah, and I also think, you know, just anything you can do to provide some security as well. I think kids really need to feel safe and secure during this uncertainty. So just even spending a little extra time talking about it, seeing what you can do, and even problem solving could really be helpful during this time.
Yeah. Julie, thank you. Tekla, hi, from Beaver Dam.
Hey, greetings from Beaver Dam. My issue has to do with peer pressure from my spouse. Both my cousin and I are experiencing this, that as the virus continues, that even though we've set up certain rules at the beginning that we decided we're going to not do this, we're going to do that, as it continues, we're both getting pressure. Like, her husband wanted to go out with some friends at a restaurant, and she knows that none of the friends wear masks. My husband wants to go visit some friends in Milwaukee, but those gatherings, just because they're family, are at least 30 people, and that's just the adults. So how do you deal with that, you know, continuing pressure, you know, and then the anxiety of it all comes back to sort of blame, like it's our fault.
Yeah.
Because we're the ones saying no, that you can't, you know, go do the thing, when really it's the fault of the virus.
Yeah, peer pressure from a spouse, Shyla.
Yeah, and it's like being made to seem like the bad guy, where you're actually doing the correct, safe health behavior by declining or not wanting to do that kind of interaction. I think that's a tough one when spouses are on different sides of the fence or practicing, or when one is wanting to be more adherent with the guidelines and maybe the other wants to throw caution to the wind. And especially when it's your own safety, your own well-being that's at play. I think having continuing the conversation, maybe revisiting some of those rules that you came up with. And I know one spouse I know decided to go on a trip with friends. All the friends actually got tested beforehand, but they were out in restaurants with no masks. And his spouse said, when you come home, you're sleeping in a different room and you're going to get tested that very next day, because I don't know what you're coming back with. And that was one of their agreements of getting tested before and after. And I think sometimes, you know, being willing to be the bad guy, because it's actually a form of positive peer pressure, that you're denoting the seriousness of this virus. And, you know, when we just hear again the statistics of we're reaching 1,000 deaths in Wisconsin, over 60,000 cases, our kids deserve to go back to school. And I always say, you know, I feel like as adults, we're letting the future generation down by not sacrificing a bit, by not holding off on doing certain things, by not saying no. And a little bit of courage right now can just help save lives and also help our kids get back to a normal where they can really have the conditions to not only do well at school, but extracurricular activities like sports and clubs. That's, you know, all of that is so important for our young people.
Yeah. Thank you for calling, Tekla. And Dave in La Crosse, your turn. Hi, Dave.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. A couple of things. One, I think the term personal distance or personal space is more acceptable to a lot of people than anything with the word social in it, because a lot of people don't like socialism, and that's part of the plot theory that's going around. And the other thing is wearing a mask still allows individual viruses to slip out, but it really cuts down the droplets, and droplets are the main thing that spreads the virus. People can fight off one individual virus usually.
Yeah. So personal space may be a better term than social distancing?
Absolutely, Dave. Thank you. And thank you for reiterating the science. I like that personal distance, personal space while we're socially connecting. Because even from a distance, we can actually connect deeply. And kind of a last point here, Larry, that often when there's scarcity, which we have now, of not being able to do the things we enjoy, see the people in the way that we used to, when there's scarcity versus abundance, we take it for granted. We kind of do it, get on with the day, move on. But when there's scarcity and we finally do meet somebody or we have that Zoom call, we savor it. And there's so much gratitude. So I think there is an opportunity as we're practicing these guidelines and staying safe to really savor and tap into the joy and the beauty of life, and also what makes us deeply human. And that's the silver lining during this time.
Yeah. And that's a good place to end. Shyla, I want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. Really appreciate it. And I'm sure we'll be talking again soon. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Larry. Stay safe. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Shyla Mergain, distinguished psychologist in the Department of Orthopedics and Rehabilitation at the University of Wisconsin-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. Great to have her with us. Well, anxiety can come from a lot of places, and our next topic has to do with something that can cause a lot of anxiety, that's psoriasis and some other skin diseases. And we'll be talking about that next with our guest, Dr. Apple Bodemer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network.